And thank you so much, choir. Thank you. We had a wonderful Sunday last Sunday with Bill Leslie. Bill Leslie was such a gracious individual. We went out to lunch over at Davidson's, and people would come up to him and say, you know, can I get your autograph? And he would accommodate them. And a lady sitting across from us said, can I get a picture with you? And so he moved his chair over and got a picture with the lady. And then we were going out, and this young lady behind the counter as we went out said, can I get your autograph? And he said, well, of course. And he was signing it. And she said, can I also get a picture with you? And of course. And of course, nobody asked for my signature, but, you know. My picture. So, want to congratulate Walter Huffman on Baptist Man of the Year. And want to thank Mike and Kay for the flowers this morning. Beautiful, beautiful flowers. Thank you so much. And I've been getting a lot of encouragement about my birthday. It was just this morning someone asked Patsy if they were going to put a candle for each year on the birthday cake Wednesday night. She said, well, we'll have to take it outside. Good thing there's a fire department nearby. All right, I'm reading from 2 Chronicles 33, verses 1 through 6. Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 55 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, following the detestable practices of the nation the Lord had driven out before the Israelites. He rebuilt the high places his father Hezekiah had demolished. He also erected altars to Baals and made Asherah poles. He bowed down to all the starry hosts and worshiped them. He built altars in the temple of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, my name will remain in Jerusalem forever. In both courts of the temple of the Lord, he built altars to all the starry hosts. He sacrificed his children in the valley of Ben-Hinnom, practiced divination and witchcraft, sought omens and consulted mediums and spiritists. He did much evil in the eyes of the Lord, arousing him to anger. Throughout the history of Judah, the Valley of Hinnom had been a gruesome place, to say the least. Now it was here that King Manasseh built an altar to the pagan god Moloch. And it was here that the children of worshipers, including the children of Manasseh, were burned on a fiery altar as a sacrifice to the false gods of Baal and Moloch. The word for this fiery altar is Tophet, which means a fireplace or a furnace. And ancient Jewish writers took this word, they added vowels to the word, and they changed its meaning to shameful thing. Shameful thing. And it was indeed a shameful thing, a shameful place, a shameful act. Now, I tell you that to say that throughout the Southern Baptist Convention, and the month of January is recognized as Sanctity of Life Month. It's a month in which we express our reverence for life, a month in which we affirm that life is sacred. All life is sacred, even unborn life is sacred. And because that is true, I submit to you that over every abortion clinic, every abortion doctor, every abortion provider, we can write those very same words, shameful thing. Shameful place. Shameful act. Medical journals and medical websites will tell you that the leading cause of death in the United States is cardiovascular disease. That's not true. The leading cause of death in the United States is abortion. 61 million since Roe v. Wade in 1973. 1 million per year. 3,000 per day, one every 30 seconds. Before this worship service is over today, 120 more babies will have died by abortion. Think of that number that I just mentioned. 61 million since Roe v. Wade. And think of the potential in all of those children. What they could have been, what they could have accomplished, the contribution that they could have made to medicine, to science, to the arts, to humanity, we'll never know. Because they never had a chance. They never had a choice. Now, Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers will tell you that abortion is about woman's health. What they don't tell you is that less than 1% of all abortions that take place have anything to do with a woman's health, or that a mother's life is in danger. Most abortions are elective. That is merely for the convenience or the personal preference of the mother. Here are some of the main reasons for the overwhelming number of abortions today. Number one, I'm not ready for the responsibility of raising a child. I'm having problems with my significant other, and or I don't want to be a single parent. I can't afford a baby right now. I'm concerned that a baby will change my life or affect my lifestyle. I remember a young lady years ago, her father came to see me one day and asked if I would talk with his daughter. She was a senior in high school and she was pregnant. And she wanted to have an abortion. Parents said they were opposed to that. I met with her. I talked to her about a place in the mountains where she could go and have the baby, put the baby up for adoption. She could even finish high school there. She shook her head and said to me, "But everyone will know why I went away." Everyone already knew that she was pregnant. But her mind was made up even before she came to see me. It was all about her, about being embarrassed before in the community, being embarrassed in front of her peers. And so later that week, she had her abortion and ended the life of a child that was growing within her. I say that because a child in the womb is not a thing to be cast aside. It is not a mass of tissue and nothing more. Dr. W.A. Lilly, renowned research professor of fetal physiology at the National Women's Hospital in New Zealand, offers this description of the unborn child. Biologically, at no stage can we subscribe to the view that the fetus is a mere appendage of the mother. Genetically, mother and baby are separate individuals from conception. By 25 days, the developing heart starts beating. By 30 days, the baby, a quarter of an inch long, has a brain of unmistakable human proportions, eyes, ears, mouth, kidneys, liver, umbilical cord, and a heart pumping blood he has made himself. By 45 days, brain waves can be measured on an EEG. By 63 days, he will grasp an object placed in his palm and can make a fist. He is responsive to pain and touch and cold and sound and light. He drinks amniotic fluid more if it is artificially sweetened, less if it's given an unpleasant taste. He gets hiccups and sucks his thumb. He wakes and sleeps. He gets bored with repetitive signals, but can be taught to be alerted by one signal from another. Of the 45 generations of cell division needed to get from the fertilized ovum to the adult, 41 divisions have already occurred by the time we are born. And the final four occupy childhood, he said, and adolescence. And this, said Dr. Lilly, is what is so callously ignored and so energetically denied by advocates of abortion. And together with that, the Bible openly declares that a baby in its mother's womb is a person, not a thing, and affirms the sanctity of the life of the unborn. Listen to this in Psalm 139. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. This is God's work. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Earth is viewed as the mother of all life. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book, the book of the living, before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. And I would point out to you that in Luke's Gospel, chapter 1 and 2, the word that is used to describe John the Baptist in his mother's womb, and the word that is used to describe the baby Jesus after he had been born, lying in the manger, are one and the same. The word is brephos, and it means embryo, fetus, newborn child, or a nursing child. In other words, no distinction is made between the humanity and the personhood of the born and the unborn. There's a quote about Jesus I want to share with you at this point. I don't remember the source, but here's the quote. As the Son of God, Jesus was sent to secure the redemption of men to this end. He himself, without surrendering his deity, became fully man, participating in the full range of human development and growth. Jesus' participation in humanity began where every human life begins, at conception. This truth is crucial. For it tells us that in God's sight, human life at every stage of development from conception onward is the object of His redeeming love. And together with that, I simply cannot imagine that the Lord Jesus, who opened His arms and said, "Let the little children come to me," would ever approve of this horrible practice of abortion. He came to redeem life, not to take it. So what can we do to confront this cruel and terrible thing, abortion on demand, even in the 9th month of pregnancy? Yes, that's right. Federal law makes it legal to abort babies in the 9th month of pregnancy. What can we do to confront this matter, to bring about change? Well, I think, first of all, we need to educate ourselves. And then we need to speak out and speak up and educate others. You see, I'm convinced. And Planned Parenthood and the other groups, I'm convinced, they don't want you to know this, but I'm convinced that if more people knew of the barbaric procedures used to abort a child, there would be an outcry across this land. I read a sermon recently where one pastor went into great detail. I cannot do that. I can't describe them for you here this morning. I just can't do that. But educate yourself. Do some research. And encourage others to do that as well. And secondly, you can vote. I can't tell you who to vote for, but you can vote. And remember, whenever a politician says, "I'm opposed to abortion, but I defend a woman's right to choose," that's just double talk. He or she doesn't care about you, and he or she does not care about the unborn. They just want your vote. And I hope you won't give it to them. And thirdly, pray for America. Pray for a change in the hearts and the lives of our people, that they might understand that sacrificing children on the altar of convenience is a shameful thing indeed. And it's got to change. America is better than that. Years ago, Richard Land wrote an article about Mother Teresa. And I have two stories for you this morning that I've shared with you before. And the first one is that article by Richard Land. It's entitled Mother Teresa's Moment. It was an electrifying moment. Seldom has our nation's capital experienced such high drama. Those who witnessed it were mesmerized by its sheer power. Mother Teresa of Calcutta was delivering the keynote address to over 3,000 people assembled for the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington, D.C. It was February 3rd, 1994. This frail, diminutive Mother Teresa was helped to the lectern to deliver her address. Flanked on either side of the platform by President and Mrs. Clinton and Vice President and Mrs. Gore. The 83-year-old Catholic nun, barely visible over the podium, boldly spoke truth to power. Mother Teresa, a Nobel Prize recipient for her work among the sick and impoverished of Calcutta, speaking with an eloquent simplicity, forged from personal conviction and compassion, called for people to follow the example of Jesus in giving whatever it takes to do good to one another. Mother Teresa then called for sacrificial service to our families. We must remember, she said, that love begins at home. And we must also remember that the future of humanity passes through the family. Then Mother Teresa dropped her bombshell. But I feel that the greatest destroyer of peace today is abortion. It is war against the child, murder by the mother herself. She concluded, any country that accepts abortion is not teaching its people to love, but to use any violence to get what they want. The greatest destroyer of love and peace, she said, is abortion. And at this point, the crowd erupted into spontaneous and sustained applause, which lasted nearly a minute as President Clinton reached for his water glass and Mrs. Clinton and the Gores stared stone-faced in Mother Teresa's direction. Clearly, this was not a comfortable moment. At the head table. But did you hear that? Any country that accepts abortion is not teaching its people to love, but to use any violence to get what it wants. Pray for America. We're better than that. And pray that we will come to a deeper, more compassionate understanding of what it means to be a free people. Abortion providers are big on saying it's a woman's right. She is free to choose to end her pregnancy whenever she wants to. But freedom does not, should not include the right to harm the innocent, especially those who have no voice, who cannot defend or protect themselves. Isn't that the great principle of what it means to be an American, to be a free people, that we stand for the innocent? And those who are powerless to speak, to defend themselves. I think that's when America is at her best. Pray for America. Pray for the hearts and minds of our people to change, and pray that this shameful thing will someday come to an end in our land. Here's the second story. In closing this morning, in one of his books, the late Lauren Isley, author, anthropologist, tells about a man who walked a beach near daybreak following a storm. The shore, according to Isley, was a beachcomber's paradise covered with prized shells that had washed up during the night. Most of those out at that early hour had brought sacks in which to carry the shells they found. But the shadowy figure that caught Isley's attention in the early morning light was empty-handed. Although the man occasionally stooped and picked up something, he quickly tossed it back into the sea. Isley was intrigued. And so he moved closer. On the individual's next stoop and throw, Isley discovered what he was about. He was retrieving starfish and throwing them back into the foaming surf. Would they live, Isley wondered? Probably not. But even if the star thrower's attempt was folly, the writer found an important lesson in it. The man had placed himself on the side of life, Isley wrote. And that's where I want to be. And that's where I want to be as well. Don't you? On the side of life. May God help us to be a people who stand on the side of life. May God save us from ourselves and our selfishness. And may God bless America. Our hymn of invitation is "Just As I Am," 307. I invite you to come this morning, to come and accept Christ as your Savior, to come and unite with His church, to come and recommit your life to Him as He calls you to serve Him in this world as we stand and as we sing.